So, getting in our little Wayback Machine, let's start with yesterday, because it's a smaller jump than Friday. This is Monday, 53 on the Portugal Highway. I'm going to be next Monday.
Oh! You know where your military industrial complex is. Welcome to the trucks. 5300 Port Chicago Highway. Yep. Business as usual. U.S. and Syria. Dropping the biggest WMD since Nagasaki on our Takfiri allies against Assad, quote unquote. Well, that's why I'm here. Standing in the way of military atrocities all around the world since
an enemy. Alright? Because that's what they got. They got us supporting our most bitter enemies. And we wondering why we ain't free. Think about it. I remember though, this came up because we were, this cat here, he thought he was going to be president. And I personally take some joy in knowing that because we were at their convention, that we may have disrupted his wishes. Okay. You know, there's a, I heard Mr., I have to mention his name, Mr. Trump, talking about how Assad is the enemy of the United States today on the news. And I thought about that. I said, whoa, slow down now. Wait, what?
On this trip, and then at the same time, they are criticizing me for going to a place that is not safe, or a place where there is not much security. So, you know, you can't win either way. It was a security decision that I made to keep this on a very close hold until after we left the country. And as you've seen since, doing interviews and just sharing with people the voices of the Syrian people who I met with and the action, most importantly, the action that we need to take now here. If I may just close on this point that I heard from so many Syrians, again, from all different walks of life, asking a sincere question, not angry, but actually asking me, Tulsi, why is it that the United States is providing support, arms and other support to groups that are working with Al-Qaeda? Syria did not attack the United States on 9/11. Al-Qaeda did.
Nor sustaining the Honduran coup, which Hillary Clinton personally bragged about. Let me jump in and tell people that the voice you're hearing now is Rick Sterling. He's a contributor to Consortium News. He's got a piece out. You might want to check out 10 Problems with Anti-Russian Obsession. Ray, I want to bring you back in here. Sort of like, I guess we have to do this Sesame Street style. Has the United States ever bugged Russia, the Soviet Union? Have they ever got involved in elections in Russia? Or is this just something the Russians do? Not that I know they're doing it this time, but I'm assuming this has been going on for a long time.
Well, Dennis, I could tell you, but then I'd have to shoot you.
Please tell us. Give us some details there.
Well, that's the biggest open secret in the world. You know, you have Iran in 53, you have Guatemala in 54, you have Chile in 73. Yeah, I mean, we're pretty good at overthrowing governments. We call it regime change now, by the way. It's not overthrowing governments anymore. And Putin has already pointed that out. But, you know, that's really not the comeback here. It diverts attention from the realities. And there are realities here that are established.
Telling him, or I forget which way that went, refer to it as a matter, okay, not an investigation. Don't tell the world that we're investigating and covering it up, because you can't like, you know, just throw dirt on it, you got to say it didn't even exist after you throw dirt on it. So that's what a matter is. It didn't even exist. But that's who this Mueller was responsible for the prosecution of General Manuel Noriega of Panama. And there was a great frontline on that with the transcript in the NPR on the CIA drug scandal that has Michael Harari featured. Of course, he was in the White House with Hillary and Bill and the son of Hitler's banker, Poppy Bush, Michael Harari and Poppy Bush were 2 weeks before JFK John plane blew up. They were on the Essex County Airport next to it. Anyway, that was Noriega, okay, who refused to cooperate with a sting operation when he's our drug dealer against the Sandinistas. He pulled out of the Contra War, boom, that's what got him. Now, CIA main money launderer for the... So, of course, Mueller oversaw post 9/11 abuses. He was the guy that drove the getaway car in the Guns for Drugs episode that had the Poppy Bush's Mina Coke stand attendants. This is all the world knows we're busted, but it's the opium war, And this is the empire that can float cannons into China's harbor and blast away until they force opium into the country in the opium war. And now Poppy Bush has done that. By way of his son in Afghanistan, by way of the media that lie out the ass when we blew ourselves up, and the media are twisting the knife in the back of Gary Webb while pretending to blow smoke up his ass to resuscitate, because you can resuscitate people. You get a bellows, you suck the air from the spire, you stick it up their rectum, and you blow hot smoke up their ass, and if you are unconscious, that's going to wake you up. You're going to start breathing, even though you'll lay there unconscious and die because your tongue is blocking your airway. Well, listen, the high teacher, Vincent Brown, knew. Well, let's get out of last week's bad news and back into this week's horror. Yesterday we sampled me out at the tracks, so I'm going to be next Monday at high noon. And if taking part in dropping the biggest WMD since Nagasaki in Afghanistan on people who are our allies against Assad in the de facto real world, if that has not already damaged your mental health, you may wish to avoid the vehicular assault, false arrest, torture, uninvestigated drive-bys, and illegal strip searches, those of us already damaged, fine, cathartic. That's my counter-recruitment notice. So if you are prepared to disarm and stand in the way of the greatest source of violence, then... But back to yesterday's, not the protest, 5300 Port Chicago Highway, but the mocking crew, Spinmeister, Bernstein, 10 points down the dial, the wannabe spook, having his head pulled out of his ass by a real spook.
Important thing to note, and I know that Rick was careful to say it this way, is that the material from the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, was acquired by virtue of a leak, not a hack. Why is that important? Well, WikiLeaks specializes in leaks. They have all kinds of people that leak things to them, and when they do, they stick a thumb drive into a machine or a computer, download the information, and get it to Julian or one of his lieutenants in a secure way. What's the big deal there? It doesn't go over the network. Everything that goes over the network is intercepted and tracked and recorded by the National Security Agency, NSA. Everything. I know it boggles the mind, but it's everything. I have that on good assurance from the former technical director and from Ed Snowden, who revealed how exactly it was done. So.
And I immediately forget what I was going to say, but I'll just blunder on to the next thing here.
And so on. So can you, maybe let's take one event and then focus on how that...
Of course, I've prepared a slideshow, so
all right.
If it would be okay.
Yes.
I'm going to go through all of them. I'm just going to scratch on the surface, but show you the things that I think are very much connecting them. also so that people can get a feeling for how this language that they're using when it comes to these. So let me see. Tell me when you can see it.
Okay.
Can you see this?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just going to show you this. This is the logo of Christ Solutions. And in the end, they say the clue is in the name. The clue is in the name. And very often when they put this type of evidence, they put it right in your face. I mean, hidden in plain sight. So I don't know. Can you see any clue here?
I'm not sure what we're looking at, you know, in terms of the back. Oh, ISIS. Okay, very good.
That's what I see, at least. But anyway, I wanted to say, if it's okay with you, that I go through a whole lot of the different, but just sort of not into great depth, because I made many, many interviews in each and every case, so people can just go on YouTube and listen to
know, like, two. Cassidy from Project Camelot, and I am very happy to be here today, and I have sort of this new setup, so I'm going to try to run this, and you can see both of us now, I think. Ole, say hello to everyone. We've got Ole Dalmagard.
Hello to everyone.
Okay, very good. And no idea if this is going to work, but we're using appear.in, and we're hoping that this is going to be a little bit better quality. It does allow both of us to be on the screen at once if we want that. And I can also reduce my picture so that when Oleg really launches into his stuff, then he can be there, you know, sort of front and center. But at this moment, it's great to have you here, Oleg. And just want to say that Oleg is a fascinating researcher and author, and I'm going to read a really brief sort of bio from your site here. It says you were awarded the Prague Peace Prize, so was I, by the way, and nominated for the Lighthouse Award. You're an author, international speaker, former journalist and investigator, and you dedicated the last 30 years of your life to researching many of the global conspiracies. Your main focus has been to find out the truth about the assassinations of JFK, the Swedish Prime Minister Ole Palme, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, John Lennon, and Lady Di, plus the terror attacks of 9/11, Norway, Oklahoma City, and many, many more. He is now considered a leading expert on false flag operations and is believed to have managed to expose and stop several planned massacres. Ole has appeared as an international speaker in the USA, UK, Germany, the Czech Republic, Belgium, Holland, Denmark, Norway, Estonia, Poland, Gibraltar, Spain, and Sweden. So, Ole, welcome, and it's great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Carrie. It's great to be with you.
Excellent. And I just got done with my Awaken Aware 2017 here in the UK. It was a highly successful conference, and we had a lot of fun, really a great crowd, and also got some photos of part of the crowd with orbs and UFOs flying all around. So, and I put that on my Facebook, so that was quite cool. So what I'd like to do is, you know, we're going to be talking about Grenfell. That's the building here that did not collapse, but did set, you know, get was in fire and is an incredible tragedy. And we also had Simon Parks addressing this issue, as well as Michael Shrimpton at my conference. So it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, connect the dots and see where you're at with all of this and what you've discovered. And so on. So go right ahead if you want to just launch in there. And there's so many ridiculous things going on, and there's a lot of machinations behind the scenes. So go right ahead.
Yeah, it's for sure. We had a very intense time, a very bizarre time, I would say, challenging, interesting, scary. It's a mix of all. And it feels like they're ramping up the speed of these operations. And I would suggest that since I've been able to, I think, publicly predict about 8 of these false flags before they happen. I predicted them on international radio about 1 month or something like that, where I target the more or less the precise target of the next operation. And this is so, I would say that it's not only speculation, but it's like I'm starting to get their way of thinking. And also, it is very important to understand who is doing this to us, because I, after all these years, would like to suggest that what we're seeing is like a mobile unit of terror that is being transported from country to country, just like a rock group on tour, with a whole setup. But in this case, it's crisis actors, you know, for SWAT teams, police, military, and so on, that are traveling together with bodyguards, coordinators, marketing agencies, experts in everything from a film set, you know, with pyrotechnics, with explosives, smoke bombs, makeup facilities, amputee actors as well, people that have lost legs and arms and so on, that are perfect for these things. And it's being coordinated by, if I'm correct, and I really, really think that I am, I think I've started to identify the head of this octopus that is carrying out these things. Because what we're starting to see with this mobile unit is that it's the same people acting out the same theme in everywhere, from Canada to Ottawa, you know, Ottawa in Canada, to Sydney, Australia, to Stockholm, to London, to Paris, to Brother, you know, it's the same. And they're using the same crisis actors, they're using the same agencies, they're using the same catering firms, they're using the same people to control the buses, the hospitals, because it's all a small little network, but on an international basis. So I, in my opinion, and I put my name and whatever, I mean, I can get sued from here to the moon, then the name of the octopus in this whole thing on the street level, the operational level on a street level, is a company called crisis-solutions.com. Very, very interesting company, to say the least. Right. Crisis-solutions.com. And I believe that they're working together with other so-called companies in a network. If you study the different intelligence agencies like the CIA and so on, they've got hundreds and hundreds of front companies that are acting together in a sort of like an invisible web. And I think that if I'm correct, crisis-solutions.com together with Crisis Cast in the U.S., which was behind Orlando, the mass shooting at the Pulse Club, they're to also in bed with a company called NC4 that are very much into control of the insurances, but also health and hospitals, as well as communication system for the U.S. Police and so on, and with cyber hacking as well. And a company called Bell Pottinger that has been involved in some major scandals where they made fake news or fake documentaries to promote wars against Iraq and other countries. And I think this is what we're seeing. And they have a website, like I said, crisis-solutions.com, where they're more or less bragging about these things that they're able to do. And so I would very much like if I can show their video from their website and just go through what they say that they can do. Would that be okay?
No, because, well, of course, I'm repeating that part, but, yeah. What they do, here's some theme music for that.
Look beneath your lips, oh.
Number one, it was someone in the Democratic National Committee who looked at these emails. Maybe it was a previous supporter who normally or earlier had supported Bernie Sanders, and he looked at her, she looked at it, and she went, God, this is terrible. Debbie Wasserman Schultz and her coterie, together with Hillary, stole the nomination from Bernie Sanders. I have to tell somebody. Well, so what did he do? Puts a little thumb drive in his machine and gets it to Julian Assange. The whole business about a Russian hack is immaterial. Did the Russians hack? Well, if the Russians didn't hack, their hacking manager should be fired. Everyone hacks, okay? Did the Russians try to get into the DNC? I don't know. But what I do know, now that Julian Assange has released something that no one people who read the New York Times would have no way of knowing this, it's called Vault 7, Series 3. And what it reveals is that over a period of 15 years, NSA and CIA developed this incredibly expensive, incredibly powerful tool, which allows them to hack into email servers and computers and, in the CIA's word, obfuscate, disguise who hacked in, and also allows them to work in five languages, including Cyrillic, leaving telltale signs in Cyrillic. Now, that is a capability that we know was used once in 2016.
So, talk about how Dada was weaponized. Can you talk about how they saw militants in Dada attacking security forces, and Amy did not take them? Why? She's an investigative journalist. Why the hell won't she talk to this?
How come Sandra Monster?
Maybe she saw it as a rabbit hole that she didn't want to go down.
I'm sorry, sir. I respect me.
Disagree on the source.
She's working for George Herbert Walker Bush.
I have no idea what
Karen is doing.
Right, we funding, but she knows she is working for the right.
No, but this is working. This is actually pushing a really bad line that is a contradiction.
Gone. She would not have had that man on her program.
Jeremy Scale.
Stephen Owens was on the program the other day.
And he was on RT saying, RT, could you give us our democracy back? We can't seem to find it, and everybody says you took it. On that note, let's go to after Rhett Dennis, the guy who said he wanted to work for the CIA until a friend steered him into the Flashpoint seat, he is saying, look at all the times we overthrew their government and all these other ones around the world, and And the ex-spook says, well, yeah, I could tell you, but then I have to shoot you. That's a chaining line, of course. It's really, well, anyway. And then he goes on to name a list. Hunter, yeah, Hunter is chilly, you know, blah, blah, blah. But he says, but that's not the right comeback. That's not the right response. And then he goes on.
Long story short, what happened here, in my view, is that the CIA did the, quote, Russian hack, end quote, was very careful to leave the little Cyrillic there so that it could be blamed on the Russian. And why is it that James Comey, the head of the FBI, refused to seize those computers, refused to send his people in there with a warrant to say, let's have a look at that? Because he was in on the act. Now, when I asked the previous technical director, Bill Binney, of the NSA, Bill, what's, you know, how, explain this all to me. He said, Ray, I was there when they started this program 15 years ago. It's incredibly expensive. It involves 700 million lines of code. So I said, Bill, that sounds like a lot. Tell me what that means. He said, each line costs $25, Ray. Do the math. So just, 100 of that would cost $2.8 billion or something like that. So what we have here is a very sophisticated program that allowed the CIA to hack into the DNC, get out a little hack and say, whoops, got Cyrillic on it, and the CrowdStrike group that was working for the DNC interpreted that immediately as proof that it was a Russian hack. It wasn't a hack to begin with. It was a leak. And this Russian hack has been revealed by these bona fide original CIA documents that Julian Assange has a way of getting them. Now, last thing I'll say on this is that, you know, remember when Megyn Kelly was interviewing Putin? You know, she asked about, why are you interfering in our election? You know, he said something real interesting. He said, you know, it could be that special services very craftily and professionally hacked in and passed the buck to Russia. Can you imagine such a scenario, he says? being able to rely on the entire technical capabilities available to the special services and then to organize some kind of attacks in the appropriate manner, making a reference to Russia, well, they can do that. He even refers to the assassination of John Kennedy as proof that the special services, as he puts it, are capable of doing all manner of things. And, you know, when you think about it, and when now we have this ground truth that this CIA program worked out with NSA, but implemented by CIA, why is it? Why is it James Comey didn't look at that? He was afraid that if he sent his specialists to look at the DNC computers, they would come back and say, Mr. Comey, you won't believe.
We did it. We did it.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
So that's, let me
say.
That's the voice of Raymond Garvin.
You know, I've sort of been ruined by my by the ethos we used to use at the CIA, and that was to get at the truth. Now, when I see the truth being bent the way it is, and the handmaiden here, of course, is the major media. The deep state couldn't function in this way without a lot of help from major media. And that's the fly in the ointment, because as you know, McGovern or Sterling, we never get on CNN or MSNBC or anything like that. Now it's always the troglodytes who are pushing for war. Now, this is relevant because, I've been around a while, and I was at the CIA in 1981 when Bill Casey came in as Reagan's CIA director. And what he said the first month that he was in power at a secret meeting at the White House was, and I quote, "We'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false," period, end quote. Now, okay, did he really say that? Yes, he really said that. How does McGovern know that? Because Barbara Honecker, a good friend of his, was there when he said it. She immediately took notes and gave the notes to Sarah McClendon, who published it. Okay, this was what Casey described at a cabinet meeting with Reagan and the others as CIA's main goal, namely to make sure the American people believe everything that they want them to believe. Now, how does that translate to today? Well, there are things, the thing I mentioned before about the Vault 7 disclosures, it's very interesting. People may remember that the issue 1 and issue 2 of these disclosures, the one that talked about using TVs to snoop on you even when they're not on in your bedroom, or the one that allowed you to take control of one of these fancy cars, not like the 73 Dodge Dart that I run, but the computer car, make it go 100 miles an hour rather than 60 miles an hour. Well, those were real revelations, and the New York Times wrote them up. But when we get to this issue, where the New York Times is faced with whether they should publish original CIA documents revealing that they could hack into these systems, disguise who hacked in, obfuscate the origin of the hack, and put in little things, not only Cyrillic, but Chinese, Arabic, Farsi, and Korean. Those were the five languages that this very sophisticated, very expensive program dealt in. And, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to put those dots together, you know. If it was a leak, which it surely was, and, you know, another thing here is the president, President Obama, admitted 2 days before he went out of office, said, you know, the conclusions of the intelligence community were inconclusive with respect to how Russian hacks got to WikiLeaks. Well, isn't that interesting? Well, so they don't know how. Well, that's because it was a leak, not a hack. And at least Obama gave us the courtesy of showing that there was no information the U.S. government had to show that it was this Russian hack, how it ever got to WikiLeaks. So this is understandable now with the help of these documents, but you try to get that into the mainstream press. You try to tell the New York Times that they ought to pay attention to all these things. It's a, you know, Bill Casey was right. Americans can believe now anything that the CIA wants them to believe. If they don't want them to believe this kind of thing, they keep it out of the paper. And I'm reminded of the situation before Iraq, when we attacked Iraq. 69% of the American people thought that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11. Now, AP poll, 68% of Americans believe that we have the Russians to thank for having that clown in as president. He should be impeached, but not impeached for something that is bogus. He should be impeached for starting a war against Syria without congressional approval, without any such as a nod to the required procedure. So, yeah, we ought to get rid of the guy. But, you know, I have this thing about honesty, and we should be honest about this. There's no proof. Zero proof.
Let me... Now.
It is true. You know, Tucker Carlson is kind of a rare bird. I mean, wasn't it he that gave some air to Assange? And wasn't it he who interviewed some people who normally don't ever get their voice on television? So it could be partly this idiosyncratic fellow, Tucker Carlson, is making... who's doing penance for past sins, and that's all to the good, because I think the Democrats are making a really big mistake here, because there is no evidence of this Russian interference, and if by some stratagem the CIA manages to create or forge or come up with manufacture evidence such as they did before Iraq, I think there are enough of us watchdogs. Rick and I alone can prevent that. Right, Rick?
Well, we will definitely try, Rick.
All right.
We'll expose it. Yeah. I mean, the one point that Ray brought up earlier, the fact that Comey and the FBI have never taken possession of the DNC computers to do their own examination, you know, speaks volumes.
It's profound. It's profound, but, you know, as Ray is, you're saying, they don't really want to find out the answer to those questions.
Right.
I think Comey was in on it. It's Comey, Brennan, and whoever's heading the NSA at a given point in time. And, you know, when Comey was asked, not only by the Senate Intelligence Committee,
30
but
seconds.
By the House Intelligence Committee, you know, why didn't you get your own forensics he looks very, very uncomfortable, and he should, because that's not malfeasance. That's not misfeasance. That's malfeasance.
All right. See, your piece on consortium was the Syrian test of Trump-Putin accord, and people can also read up on your stuff on your own website, right, Ray?
That's correct. RayMcGovern.com.
RayMcGovern.com. Thank you.
They're not the enemy. You know, and she does a lot of good work, too. But I think on the serious thing, she's out for lunch. And I'm wondering how did this happen? What's this, the Syrian revolution crap? Where did it come from? Now, the other thing is, this, you know, what this is leading to, what I see is the political disorientation of the American left and the disintegration of the American left. When you wind up in your boss's lap, you're done. You're through. No, serious. This is not good. And when imperialism is on one knee, it's time to start kicking it in the head. But we can't seem to get, you know, so this is yet another case where the disorientation of the left is preventing us from going on a political offensive against our enemies. And I don't know, just what's your thoughts on that last week? And you talk about the non-sectarianism of the people. And I think that that is a normal human development. But you got to tell me about the Kurds. What do you think? Because they've had these anarchists run around here talking about the Kurds and creating the little heaven and all of this and that. And I just kind of, I went to this thing, I listened, and I just shook my head and walked away. But if you know about this, you know what I'm talking about, and the problem with these Kurds, it looks like they're being kind of used by the United States, to be perfectly honest. I'm not trying to put them down. I feel bad for them. You know, everybody's dogging them, so, you know. And then, you know, so what is the source of this confusion? I'm leaving it at that. I know that's a lot, but I'm not real, you know.
Okay, thank you. No, please tell the point. And there are people that mind, so I will address some of them shorter. I'm not a Kurds expert. All I can say is my feeling is that they're being used. The whole autonomy project in Syria, it includes an area that is not strictly Kurdish, but other states or other backgrounds. So I don't think that there may be good Kurds, you know, in the struggle against terrorism. I'm not an expert. I can't really comment much more on that. Mock, you know, I disagree with you in that I don't think it's accidental. And I might disagree with my colleagues as well. I firmly believe that they are investigative journalists and they know damn well what's going on, and they, for whatever reason, have chosen to report. And I will say this, there have been many people who've written into Fox News and say, please have Vanessa Bailey on. Vanessa Bailey is deeply investigated in White Helmet for a year and a half. And Democracy Now! Got the message but refused to have her on. I don't know why. They don't have me to be on, that's fine. If they don't want to be on, that's fine. I don't care about that, but they were wrong on Libya. They misreported on Libya. They're still misreporting on Syria. This is 2016, yeah? Not 2011, not 2012. So what are they doing, still reporting civil war and revolution? It's clear it's not. They're investigative journalists. I believe that they're doing some potentially, but, you know, that's my own personal opinion. Your other question about the left, I don't know how to answer that. I think that I can't really answer it too well. It's just my feeling that certain groups in the left have been infiltrated and they've been... It's hard to answer. I think that people are well-meaning, for example, supporters of certain liberation movements who don't get it out of Syria. I think they've been led astray, but it's complex and I don't know the answer how to unite people. I think the Hands Off Syria Coalition .net, the website, is a good effort because it is bringing together various anti-imperialist, anti-war groups. But how to reach those other groups, I really can't say. It's a massive struggle and important one.
You may have addressed this earlier, but just a couple of years ago in that first weekend here, and I'm seeing what looks like on new grounds with those
Russia, I'm not going to get into that too much. I agree with you. I think that the figures are being pointed wrongly in Russia. The wiretapping thing, I had no idea. Russia was invited by Syria to participate in fighting against terrorism. It's harsh and right that they were invited to do so. The U.S.-led coalition was not invited. They are illegal in Syria and have committed many crimes in Syria.
As for the Clinton allegations, I would encourage you to look at Seymour Hersh's article, Who's Sarin. He traces how the Sarin got to rebels in Syria. There's other people who've done the right investigations into various chemical weapons allegations. Professor Tim Anderson is somebody to look for on global research. He's addressed these different chemical weapons incidents or allegations and refuted them. In summary, they've accused the Syrian army, and every time it's been the so-called rebels that have had possession of sarin or other chemical weapons and have perpetrated the attack.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions, but before I ask my questions, at the risk of being...
I haven't thought it's alive, I can't say. I'm sure different intelligence agencies probably have tried to assassinate him, but I think the point that he's still alive amongst the Syrian people and making public appearances is a very important point. He does this routinely, and he's met, in general, with great appreciation. I'll just give one brief example. Last December, I was in Syria. I was invited to a concert at a church in Damascus. The day Khar Assad and his wife dropped in at the choir, he was practicing, and you can find the video photos of them.
Lines in the Sand, Three Essays on the Identity of the Person by Peter Gill.
Well, she's so notoriously wrong that somebody has to, like, cover for her a little bit.
Okay, well, if she was really cynical and just working for the man...
Well, no.
She was
Stockholm Syndrome hostage. You understand the Stockholm Syndrome? Okay, you're a hostage, right? You sympathize with who's holding you hostage. There's a carrot and a stick. The carrot is the millions from Soros. You know, the stick is what happened to her in Dili when she did ferociously stand in the way of her boss, her current boss. Now, the babies are Salvadoran rebels. They got turned to be death squads. Amy and John, Juan are Poppy Bush's babies. She ferociously ripped his throat out in 88. What do you mean no quid pro quo? What do you call the end user certificate about Honduras? That was our Amy. But look what happened. They started paying her to cover post 9/11, which means that if you start covering what led up to it, we'll cut the money. All these people are dependent on it. She's hostage to that. Money and a stick is going to repeat the Dili massacre.
Initially, she stayed away from 9/11 because it was... 9/11 spun out of control, Greg.
1 year later, she said, I do what I can. When I said, why do you always spin the success as a failure? Because she had the families on 1 year later after 9/11. When she was lying, she was hearing multiple explosions. She was asking, where were you when the explosions took place? To Ezell Harris, who repeatedly said, no, there was a series of explosions.
Threatcon Delta at the Department of Defense.
And we go now to the gentleman who's just walked in. Can you tell your name and where you were when the explosion took place?
My name is Ezell Harris. I was just off the bridge by Church Street when the second tower went down.
And what did you see?
It came down like a house of cards. There was... appeared to me to be a series of explosions, both on the top level of the building and on the ground. There were cars, there were trucks, emergency response vehicles, pandemonium, something just like out of, you might as well call this Die Hard 4.
What did you think was happening? Were you listening to a radio?
No, I work in a federal building in Brooklyn across the bridge, and we're building a federal post office there. I'm a steam fitter by trade, Local 638. Our building was evacuated, and upon our building being evacuated, myself and some other construction workers, we rushed to the area to volunteer our services for anything that we, you know, could be useful to or for.
So you'd come across the bridge and you knew something bad had happened to one of the towers.
I knew something bad happened before I even got to the bridge, because I work in a federal building. The building was evacuated. The job was shut down and the building was evacuated immediately. That was when the first tower got struck. So, and we could see clearly the smoke and debris, but the second tower was still standing at that time.
And so what happened with the people on the street where you were, Church Street, just blocks away?
It was pandemonium. People running everywhere, running for cover, ducking, a lot of people in shock. It was just chaos, complete.
What did you do?
What I tried to do is after just blew New York up.
This is Dennis Bernstein here. Let me ask the gentleman, as a construction worker, were you shocked to see how easily the buildings seemed to go down? Was this a surprise to you?
As a construction worker, sir, I'd like to tell you that it wasn't easy for the building to come down. They didn't come down easily. That's number one. I believe that there was a series of explosions. I believe that not only did the aircraft come from the top, I believe there were some base explosions at the bottom. When we put something up, it's up. New York is one of the finest construction armies in the world. Our people are craftsmen, we're tradesmen, we know what we're doing. We put a building up, it's up. So for somebody to take it down, that's one of the reasons why I came across. This is my city and I build it. Anything that happens to one of my buildings in this city, I want to know about it. I want to go find out what's going on. I want to volunteer my services to help any way I can.
You said you work in the federal building in Brooklyn. Who do you work for?
I work for a local 638. I'm a steam fitter. We are currently doing a project in Brooklyn. It's a post office. It is several federal buildings in Brooklyn. We are doing a renovation job there. But it's a federal building. Being as such, as soon as we were aware that there were, as soon as the word went out that it was a possible terrorist attack, that this wasn't, and we knew after the first aircraft, after the second aircraft, we knew that it wasn't an accident because we know, you know, it's restricted airspace.
Assad is the enemy of the United States. Assad ain't bombing the United States. The United States is bombing Syria. That's what's going on here. So they say, I'm too outdone here. We need people that understand who our enemy is so we can identify that enemy, organize against that enemy. And I most recently read a pamphlet that clarified a lot of this in terms of the coming wars that we see and the developing war we see now. There's been, to tell you the truth, the United States is, you know, constant war, right? And we thus have thrown up a movement that organizes against war. Excuse me, but Mr. Becker, would you come here for a second, sir? I have to thank the Lord for people that actually do real organizing against war. This gentleman is but one of them.